It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the Journey of Giving Back. Each week, I go all over New Jersey, all over the country, looking for wonderful people, people making a difference, people lifting up the community, people trying to do their best to make the world better. If you like the show, please subscribe on YouTube. Follow us on various podcast streaming services, wherever you get your podcasts. This morning, we have the great honor of bringing in Dr. Carrie Silverman, a noted ophthalmologist right here from Mountain Lakes, New Jersey. He is an innovator in LASIK surgery. He brought the first LASIK procedure to the Garden State in the late 90s. He's a great guy, a very talented ophthalmologist. He got a prestigious award because of his involvement in Vision Harvest that he started in 2011. He got the Operation Volunteer of the Year Award from a very prestigious organization, the Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons. And it's a great honor this morning, Dr. Silverman, to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good morning, Doc, again. And, you know, for the listeners, on the Journey of Giving Back, I put the spotlight on those that make a difference. And we're going to talk a lot today on the journey of your involvement in ophthalmology, but more importantly, your big heart of giving back and starting Vision Harvest. Because I try to put the spotlight on those who have decided to take their God-given gifts and talents and help others. So lift up the world. So, Doc, a little bit about yourself. I know you're from Mountain Lakes, New Jersey. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in West Orange. We raised our kids in Livingston. I have three kids, a boy and two girls. We have five grandchildren now. And after the kids were out of the house about 8 years ago, we moved to Mountain Lakes.
Wonderful. Yeah. And how did you get involved in the field of ophthalmology? You know, I'm always curious about why people decide to go in a certain direction from a career perspective.
Sure.
How did you get involved in ophthalmology?
Well, when I was in medical school, I wanted to be a pediatrician until I did peds. And I like kids, but, you know, I didn't like the parents and the screaming and the yelling. So the pediatric rotation was at United Hospital where the ophthalmology clinic was. And that's where I started to hang out. And it really interests me. I mean, it's a good field. There's a lot of medicine involved. There's a lot of surgery involved. You treat people of all ages and nobody's screaming at you.
Yeah. You know, I went to Aquatopia yesterday. Talk about a lot of screaming youngsters. You ever been to that water park?
No.
Oh, my God. Wow. I was blessed with two young boys. And my six-year-old, he's a bit of a daredevil. So he had daddy going down all these slides. And it was quite an experience. But there's a lot of screaming youngsters. You know, people take for granted their eyesight. You know, one of the things that when I was getting ready for the show, and I realized, you know, as people get older, you know, cataracts develop. What I researched, probably people in their 60s, 65 and up especially. But the field of ophthalmology, how long have you been practicing for?
I've been practicing since 86.
So you've seen a lot. And one of the things also, which is really fascinating, is you're an innovator. What medical school did you go to?
It was UMDNJ. Now it's called Rutgers Medical School in Newark.
Good. And when you decided to become an ophthalmologist, what type of reaction did you get from your family? Were they supportive of it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right. And when you went to med school at Rutgers, UMDNJ, now Rutgers, could you tell you wanted to be an ophthalmologist?
Like I said, I didn't know until my third year of medical school when I did the peds rotation. And then so ophthalmology, that's what I knew I wanted to do at that point.
But was there something about the eyes and how they function? Were you like fascinated as a youngster?
Yeah, I mean, I was always into photography, as you know, and the eye is a lot like a camera. And the surgery was intricate, and the people that were in the clinic where I was observing were great guys, and they showed me around, and it was very interesting.
You know, one of the things for the audience, the people watching and listening, you know, before we started, you know, you had your camera taking pictures. And one thing I will say is I am not camera shy.
No, you're not.
You caught me off guard a little bit. So that was an interesting way to get this, you know, get myself warmed up for the show. So when you started in your practice of ophthalmology, were you by yourself or were you with a group of folks?
No, I started by myself with It's interesting. So in 1986, I started practice on my own in Parsippany. And my first day in my office, I had 12 patients because one of my dad's good friends, a guy named Mickey Mintz, who was an internist out of Denville, and he sent all his patients to me the first day. So I had 12 patients my first day. It was like crazy.
What did that feel like?
It felt awesome.
Yeah.
Next day, I didn't have 12.
Okay. You get off to a good start, yeah. Though. That's okay.
Yeah.
So when you went out in Europe, were you nervous?
Of course. Of course. Started by, you know, most people don't start on their own. They join group practices and, you know, they're fed patients, and that's not how I did it. I started really from zero or from 12.
Well, let's talk about that, though. So, you know, on the journey, I'm always interested, too, to try to motivate and inspire folks. So when you went through medical school and then you're going to start your own practice, as you highlighted, many folks join a particular, let's say, office. You went out on your own. Did you have your thoughts that you could make it happen being on your own?
I did. You know, back in the 80s, ophthalmology is a lot different. For instance, cataract surgery, most people are doing something called extracapsular cataract surgery, which is a large incision surgery. And I was trained to do fake emulsification, which was the first small incision surgery. So I came out to Morris County. Most guys weren't doing it. So I knew I can bring something new to the area. And that these guys weren't doing it. And there's a big difference in the results. So it was a good start.
So from an innovative perspective, because, you know, once again, when I was like researching your background, you were the first one to introduce the LASIK procedure in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. What was that like? I mean, was that also, can you tell us about, you know, that experience and where you thought you could do that?
Well, before LASIK, there was RK, and I was doing RK, which got pretty good results. And as soon as LASIK got its approval, you know, I bought a Vizix laser into my office right away. And there are some other guys using other lasers, but I was the first one to do in-office Vizix in New Jersey.
So for the listeners, and even from RK, what is RK?
RK is radial keratometry, where you make incisions into the cornea. It was innovated in Russia, and that was to treat nearsightedness, and it was pretty good results. It worked, but certainly nowhere near as good as LASIK, where LASIK just reshapes your cornea with a laser.
Right. That was also why I thought bringing out would be great, is because we do, once again, take our eyesight for granted.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's one of the most precious things, because you don't realize until you have a visual issue how important the eyes are. They really are a gift from God to have, you know,
exactly.
Eyes that work properly. So when you started in the late 90s with this LASIK procedure, did your peers try to, like, learn from you? How did that all work?
Yeah, I actually had a couple doctors would come to my office and use my laser because they were few and far between. Like five or six guys were coming to my office. And in the late 90s, it really started to boom because the results were just spectacular. I mean, you come in here in my office with glasses and you walk out seeing. Next day, you're driving a car without glasses. I mean, it was remarkable.
Right. So for the listeners, because, you know, I wear glasses, not all the time. Little vanity may be thrown in there. I don't know. Probably like a lot of folks.
Yeah.
You think you look better without glasses. But
I understand. Mine are on the floor.
There you go. So sometimes you don't want to see what's going on too, though. No, but on a serious note, so when people start to notice they're having these visual issues, what do you recommend for the listeners when their vision looks like they're changing a little bit?
Well, I think in general, you know, most people should have their eyes examined every 2 years just to check for such things as glaucoma. I mean, glaucoma is an irreversible loss of vision without symptoms. So it's something you don't want to miss. If it's picked up late and you've lost your vision, it's too late. But obviously, anytime somebody notices a change in vision, they should see their ophthalmologist or optometrist.
So going back to the 90s, because once again, you know, I love people that are innovators, changing the world, doing things that are different, because mm-hmm. That's always a risky kind of proposition, right? But it sounded like, from what I understand, is you actually felt enough confidence, you let colleagues come and learn from you mm-hmm. in terms of your technique. Why did you feel it was important to share that knowledge?
Because there's so many people in our community that need to see. I mean, I certainly can't treat them all. And, you know, if you're interested in learning to do something, why would I get in your way to do it? They're going to go somewhere. Might as well learn from me.
Right. No, that's outstanding. You were able to do that. So in the world of vision, the cataracts. And I want to talk about cataracts. Okay. My late grandmother had cataract surgery, and it was like a life-changing thing for her. What are cataracts?
So we have a lens in our eye, just like the lens in a camera. And as we get older, this lens loses its clarity. It becomes opaque. So a cataract is a cloudy lens. Early on, it'll just affect your vision. You have frequent changes in glasses. You may have some difficulty with night driving, glare at night. And then it gets to the point where you can't drive, where you're not able to do the things you want to do. And that's the time to have cataract surgery.
So you bring up a very important point for the listeners, too, is you should get your eyes checked every few years. I'm guilty as charged. I can't say I follow that mantra, right, though I should. But I understand the importance of it. But is there like an age group that are especially vulnerable to this cloudy issue with the eyes and those kind of issues?
It's obviously more common as you get older. I'm going to tell you, 60 years and older, about half people have cataract surgery. That being said, every month I'll do one or two people in their 40s that have visually significant cataracts. So anytime 40s on up is when they start to develop.
So going back to the world of LASIK procedures, what type of general conditions are you doing LASIK procedures for?
LASIK is mostly now for nearsightedness and astigmatism. So these are people that can't see far away, but they can take off their glasses and they can see up close.
All right. And is there an age group that you can get LASIK?
18 and older with a stable refraction.
And what about, is there a cutoff point for, let's say, you're nearsighted? Because that's what I have. I'm curious myself, and probably a fair amount of listeners have nearsighted issues.
I've treated up to minus 14, which is pretty strong, but it's really based on the power of your prescription and the thickness of your cornea, because the higher your prescription, the more tissue you have to remove from your cornea. So if you have a high prescription and you get LASIK, that means you have a thick cornea. So it's a combination of things.
I mean, like, so I'll be 60. I'm curious about maybe I can get rid of my glasses. Am I too old to have that procedure done?
Well, if you're 60, you might have some small cataracts.
Oh, my God. Now you're going to ruin my day. So you know, the sun's shining.
But you can achieve the same thing with cataract surgery more. So let's go. So if you had LASIK at 60 and you didn't have cataracts, you'd have great distance vision. You still need reading glasses for up close. But if you were 60 and you had small cataracts, we could take out your cataract and put a multifocal lens in your eye and give you distance and close vision. So you actually get more out of it with cataract surgery.
So for the listeners, a lot of people are nervous about cataract surgery. I mean, when I was thinking about it, way back when my grandmother had it, I was like, oh my God, I hope she's going to be able to see after.
Right.
This is many years ago, God rest now. But I'm sure the field has obviously became much more innovative and the procedures are much more streamlined. What happens if you don't treat your eyes when you have these cloudy visual issues?
Keep seeing worse. I mean, you're not going to see well. The good thing about cataract surgery, as opposed to glaucoma, that I mentioned before, is glaucoma is an irreversible loss of vision. Cataract surgery is a reversible loss of vision. So we can take those cataracts out and help you to rehabilitate your vision. That being said, the bigger the cataract gets, the more difficult they become to remove. So at some point, it becomes very difficult. It still can be done. So you don't want to wait till that point.
And I read also that if you don't get treated properly, you know, people become very isolated because they're not seeing well. Obviously, it's dangerous for if they're driving a car, and just the social interaction can be decreased substantially. And for the listeners, I would urge everyone, right? There's great doctors like Dr. Silverman out there that can treat these conditions, and almost all are treatable, except, you know, glaucoma obviously is a very, very serious matter to deal with. How many LASIK procedures have you done, Doc?
I don't know. Thousands and thousands. I don't count.
So when someone comes in your office, are they nervous to have the procedure done?
I always tell people, first of all, the surgery I think is pretty minor surgery, but surgery is only minor on somebody else.
Yeah, no, of course.
So if you're not nervous that your eye's being operated on, I think there's something wrong with you. Everybody should be nervous. It's still a procedure and you're still going through it.
Is the patient awake during the procedure?
Yeah. With LASIK, we give a Valium type of substance. With cataract surgery, a little bit more sedation, but you're awake with both.
All right. And then you've done so many of these procedures, And what's it like when you have a patient that walks in? When will they know if it worked? Let's say they're going to undergo a LASIK procedure. When will they know?
Well, they're going to lay on the bed. They're going to have their LASIK procedure, both eyes in 10 minutes. Now, before they lay down, I have a clock on the wall. They look at the clock with their glasses on. They can't tell the time. When they sit up after the procedure, they can already tell the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, are most people doing one eye at a time or doing both?
LASIKs, both eyes at the same time.
Same time?
Yeah.
Now, is that nerve-wracking as a surgeon? Because, you know, no. You're good. You're ready to go. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you're saying for the listeners and viewers, if they have these visual issues, they can go to a competent doctor like yourself and get a LASIK procedure done. And they'll probably know right away once, you know, the time period goes by.
That's an immediate improvement. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And what will they know when it's totally, it's as good as it's going to get?
About four months out, they're completely stable.
Interesting. Yeah. That's really a beautiful thing. So what's that like when you're helping patients? You know, obviously, they can see so much better.
I mean, it's awesome. A lot of people will sit up and they'll start crying. I mean, the response is pretty amazing, both for cataract surgery and for LASIK, actually.
And how does it feel as a professional? Because, you know, for example, we all have to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most have to make a living, right? And when you're able to do that, to change someone's life, because obviously that, I want to get your perspective on it.
Oh, it's very rewarding. I mean, it's one of the best things about being an ophthalmologist is because generally we make people very happy. Obviously, you can't help everybody, and obviously people have complications. That happens too. But most of the time, people are ecstatic with surgery or just, you know, anything else that we're doing.
That's an awesome thing.
Yeah,
to be able to make someone feel good and change their life.
Exactly.
And this goes back to where what you're doing, using your skilled hands, you're changing people's lives.
Yeah.
So that, I understand, was a gift you had. Did you know, though, as a young person, like, you had that ability to, like, I can't, it's interesting. My little guys, I like to play Legos. I don't know, my hands, I have no idea what goes on.
Yeah, I always good hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
I was always doing those little models and things like that as a kid, so.
How were you with Legos? You have, like, your grandkids? You do Legos?
I think I'm too old for Legos.
Oh, you're tough for that.
I don't think we did Legos. We had the Lincoln Logs.
Oh, okay. So I made with
or
your
Tonka toys. Oh. We didn't have Legos.
Oh, yeah,
I'm too old.
Oh, yeah. Join the club there, right? But no, my wife is really good with the Legos. I don't know. The hands.
My grandsons are very good with the Legos, too. I mean,
interesting.
Yeah.
No, but the reason why I bring it up is, like, a lot of people I know that are professionals, there's something they knew in their youth. They just felt they had that ability. And is that how it felt for you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And as you've been doing this how many years now in ophthalmology?
86, so it's 37 years.
Yeah. So that's a long career in it. Did you know you're going to be involved in this field for all these years?
I would hope so, yeah.
Now, how do you feel in the morning, you know, when you get up out of bed? Because one of the things that I always try to tell people, it's willing to listen, hopefully the audience is growing, is do something you love. You know, don't do something, you know, you're looking at the clock, you don't want to get out of bed.
Exactly.
You hit the snooze button and it's Monday morning because you're like, oh my God, I got to go back to work. I got to deal with this boss or whatever. Do you enjoy it?
I still enjoy what I do, absolutely. That being said, you have to have other interests in life too. You can't make your work all consuming.
Right.
You have a good work-life balance, which is what you got to have.
You know, I always also, I used to love to watch The Karate Kid, Miyagi. I mean, who's back? I mean, they have the new series.
Cobra Kai, I love it.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get my boys into Cobra Kai to watch it a little bit. But no, but the reason why I bring it up is, you know, it is good to have balance in life. You can't just work and then you burn out, right? And I also read, like, you know, part of one of the things, you have a lot of diverse hobbies. Like, give us some of the hobbies you like to kind of blow off the steam of the day.
I got my bike in the back of the car. I'm going biking after this. I like photography. I like to work out. Like to hang out with the family, with the grandchildren. I love to travel.
Tell us about, you know, I find working out, my boys scream at me. My boys are like, the audience doesn't want to hear about your physique. You know what I'm saying? You know, they don't want to hear about it.
Why not?
I don't know. They're like, yeah, forget about your physique. I did go to Aquatopia, like I mentioned, I take my shirt off. So
there you go.
Hope I didn't scare anyone. No, but the reason why I bring it up is, how do you feel when you work out and then being able to go to work? I mean, does that give you more energy? Do you feel better?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I work out every day before work.
Right. Is that a habit?
It is. Absolutely.
How long you been doing that?
Forever. My wife is in great physical shape, and she works out more than me. So it's all because of her. She started the trend, but we work out every day.
That's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, and is it a routine, like part of your life?
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast this morning, even though I should only listen to the Todd Leonard Show podcast.
Of course.
But I was listening to this podcast, and they talked about the importance of a routine. And the most successful people stay in a routine. And it sounds to me like you follow it like a religion, but a good one, where you're working out and that's part of your life.
Definitely.
Right. And how do you think that helps you get through the work there? Because, you know, obviously you have a lot of intricate procedures you're doing.
I think it energizes you. I mean, it keeps your day going. Otherwise, yeah, I think life gets a little bit, you know, mundane if you're not working out and keeping active and doing other things.
Now, I was reading, getting ready for the show, besides biking, what kind of bike do you have?
I have a lot of bikes.
Oh, do you? You only ride one at a time, though. So what do you have?
I'm riding my gravel bike today. We're going out do some gravel riding, me and a buddy.
So these trails, I mean, where is it?
It's like gravel roads out near Mendham.
Really?
Yeah, by Trump National.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, Bedminster area. It's nice out there. I always get nervous, though, when I see the bicyclists on these narrow roads, and they, like, take over half the road, and I try to say, wait, I think to myself, besides the fact I'm an injury lawyer, I'm like, that's not the greatest
thing. The bicyclists always lose, so you need to be over to the right.
You got to be way to the right.
And that's why I like living in mountain lakes. I can do a 30-mile ride out of my driveway and I hit a red light and not to see too many cars.
Wonderful, yeah. Is that also good when you're out in the air in nature, like the weather? We had a lot of rain recently, but the sun's been out, and I like the sun. I'm sure people do as well.
Yeah.
Is it nice just to get on the bike and just get away from everything?
I do it a lot. I'll do a lot by myself. It just gives you time to think and just relax and unwind.
Now, I also read pickleball. I'll be honest.
Pickleball.
I don't know anything about pickleball.
It's fun.
People are into pickleball. I thought I was athletic.
You're the right age now.
I'm getting a little That's a little mean-spirited, but
I'm
true.
Older, I can say that.
That's true. No, but pickleball. I mean, how'd you get involved in pickleball?
We have a house down the shore, and there's a lot of pickleball courts down there, and we just started to play one day. The good thing about pickleball is it's very easy to be mediocre. So
very easy
to be mediocre. So you can pick up this game and be competent at the game right off the bat, and it's fun, and it's easy to play. It's obviously very hard to be very good, which I'm not. But to be mediocre and just to, you know, go out and have fun is easy to do. Anybody can do it.
Interesting. So I know also one of the beautiful things, and why I heard from my friend Ellen, one of the producers of the show, that you got to get Dr. Silverman on because he started Vision Harvest. And for the listeners, and once again, this is why I love people like you that are willing to come on the show, is on the journey. Vision Harvest, tell us about why you started that in 2011.
What I found is that there's a lot of people that are uninsured, and without insurance, they can't afford the proper medical care. And a perfect example is I had a patient who came to me from Ohio when I started to do Vision Harvest, and he was a truck driver. And he lost his license because he did not see well enough to drive, and he didn't have insurance, and he couldn't get a job because he couldn't see. So he took his camper, him and his wife, drove out to New Jersey, camped out in our parking lot. I did cataract surgery one day, and the next week I did the other eye, and then he drove back to Ohio, and now that was a while ago, but he got a job as a truck driver again. I mean, the problem with our country, I really think, is that insurance is pegged to employment. And if you don't have a job, you know, money, you can't get insurance. And there's a lot of people that fall through the cracks. So Obamacare or no Obamacare, there's a lot of people in our country still without insurance.
So the title Vision Harvest, now you started this in 2011. How did you come up with the title Vision Harvest?
I just think it was some brainstorming in the office. We all sat around, and that was the name we came up with.
Oh, I love the name.
I think it was a great name, too. And we started it as a during Thanksgiving, you know, the surgery center was slow. So we asked for a day, the day before Thanksgiving, nobody operated. So we asked if they would come in and if we could do surgery. So the first year, I think we had like 25 or 30 patients. So we had it was just set for one day a year. It's no longer that. Now it's throughout the year.
No, but for the listeners, Doc, you know, I want them to understand you're taking your God-given talents, which is a gift, and you're giving the gift of sight.
Correct.
But you're doing it pro bono, gratis. You're providing free, really world-class ophthalmological care. And that's a beautiful thing.
We're actually paying because we have to pay the surgery center fees and we have to pay for staffing and we get all the supplies for free. Anesthesia works for free and the doctors in it work for free as well. But we do actually have to pay for the services to have them performed.
So on the journey of giving back, mm-hmm. I always want to understand, hopefully for the listeners, to motivate them to say, hey, look, mm-hmm. if Dr. Silverman, who's got this God-given gift, can do it, maybe I can try something. Maybe I can put my hat in the ring. Maybe I can make the world better.
Sure, sure.
Was there something you felt in your life? This is a little introspective. I apologize. It's Sunday morning, but you'll be biking at like 10:05, okay?
Okay.
But was there something in your life that you said, you know, I want to do something that I want to give back more. I want to do something. What was going on?
Yeah, I mean, I have a great life. I mean, I make a nice living, taking care of people's eyes. I mean, it's a lucrative business, and I wanted to give back. I mean, there's people that need services that can't afford it. I don't have to make money every time I treat somebody, and it was easy enough to do. It's just time. Time for me is free.
But you also just highlighted for the listeners and those watching on Facebook, chat out on Facebook, is that basically you're actually subsidizing it. You're paying for the facility too. So right. It's not just and your team.
So Vision Harvest was a 401c charitable organization. So we raise money and we use this money to pay for the procedure. Exactly.
Wonderful.
And it's also funded by, you mentioned before, AASCRS. They have a foundation that provides free cataract surgeries throughout the country. So they actually help fund Vision Harvest as well.
You know, myself being a trial lawyer, you know, the New Jersey Bar, we do a lot of pro bono work. There's a lot of wonderful colleagues that mm-hmm. put so much time into helping others
sure.
that can't afford the legal services. In 2011, when you started it, now 2020, is that your company?
iCare 2020.
iCare 2020. When was that started?
I started it in 1986. It was just my name. Then it became Parsippany Eye Care Associates. And then we changed it to iCare 2020. But since 86.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So in 2011, when you decided that you're going to be doing this incredible surgery for free, through the organization. And you touched on one of the anecdotal stories is the trucker. Mm-hmm. You changed his life.
Yeah, definitely.
And what was that like when you realized that in 2011 you could do that? What was the feeling like in terms of like doing it for free?
I mean, I can get paid $1 million. Doesn't feel as good as that. I mean, that was pretty amazing. And that's just one story. I mean, I had a woman who was completely blind in both eyes, sat up from the table, started screaming hysterically. I mean, it's just very rewarding. Very rewarding.
That's incredible. So you talked about gratitude and how important that is in your life, doctor, in terms of being grateful.
I mean, I'm grateful for everything I have. And when a patient tells me how grateful they are for what I do, like I said, nothing feels better. Nothing.
Well, God bless you. You know, Doc, we're going to take a very short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
Welcome back. Once again, we have Dr. Carrie Silverman. We're talking Vision Harvest. We're talking about an organization started in 2011. And we're just touching on gratitude and being grateful. You know, I really think that's important. to be grateful and to count your blessings. So many people don't take a chance to understand just how lucky they really are. So I'm going to ask you another kind of philosophical question, Doc. I hope once again you're getting on your bike in like more than maybe a little more than a half hour. But has it changed your life being involved in Vision Harvest and doing this work for, you know, over a decade?
Yeah, it has. It gives you a new appreciation for what you have and be grateful for the things that you have in life. And obviously you feel bad for people that don't have what you have, but at least you're able to give something back, and it's very rewarding.
No problem. I mean, God, like I said, God bless you for doing it, you and your wonderful team. For the listeners, because we all know people, unfortunately, they don't have the finances. Either they're out of work or basically they're working poor. They just don't have enough money. They just, as you highlighted, fell through the cracks.
Yeah.
You know, I bring on folks to Interfaith Food Pantry. I'm in Morris County. You're in Morris County. There's parts of every state where they're very affluent communities, but there's still folks, unfortunately, that need a hand up. They need some extra help,
absolutely,
either with food or, in your case, your incredible ophthalmological care. What's the criteria for the listeners and viewers if they wanted to obviously have this procedure done? And I'm a little remiss. I want to make sure if they want to reach you at Vision Harvest, how do they reach you, Doc?
Visionharvest.org. I can't remember our phone number. You have it somewhere. You can give it to them. But yes, what are the criteria? They need to be 200% above the poverty line. They need to be a resident of the United States, and that's it.
Right. I read they should have no health insurance.
No health insurance.
Right. And you do require, you don't want people, pulling a fast one on you. They have to document they're eligible financially. And for the listeners, the number is 973-200-8250. Vision Harvest. Now, you're doing this with other folks on your team, right? You have a team of folks that help you?
Yeah.
Right? And one of the things I also read is you normally do the procedures around the holidays, but you've expanded it now?
Yeah, we used to do it one day, the day before Thanksgiving. That's how we got Vision Harvest. You asked about that before.
Yeah.
It was during the harvest. But we've stopped that. So now we do, when people have a problem, they call my office, and we find out where they live. There's a couple of doctors in the area that are also involved, and we'll send them to their office or our office, and we'll just add them to our regular surgical schedule now.
So
we do like one a week or... depending on how many it is.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
You're given a gift. I mean, especially right around the Thanksgiving, holiday times. I mean, you're changing lives. But what's a greater gift than giving someone eyesight?
Exactly.
That was why I was so honored that you come on, because people take their vision for granted. And you also touched on people lose their jobs. I mean, their whole life has changed if you can't see.
Exactly.
I was on your Facebook page. I was digging a little bit myself, trying to study, getting ready for the show. You have some wonderful pictures of you and your patients, when the procedure's done. A lot of thumbs up. Thumbs up. I hope people, when they see the Todd Leonard show, we get a thumbs up too. Thumbs up, exactly. But, what's it like when you share those pictures, and what's the feeling?
I mean, you can see those pictures. They're all smiling. I mean, this is immediately after surgery. My patients go home without a patch on their eye, so they're able to see right after the surgery. And, we're giving them the gift of sight. I mean, that's what we're doing.
So I also it's one thing to talk about doing something, but you're actually a doer. And that's also, I think, really important for the listeners. It's good to plan, but it's important to actually do something, right? How did your wife and family respond that you were going to take time out of your very busy schedule and basically do pro bono, world-class ophthalmological care?
I mean, and then, when I first started doing this, my kids were young back then, and it was the first year we did it the day before Thanksgiving, so we had to see all the patients on the Thanksgiving day, and obviously the office is closed, so who manned the office is my three kids and my wife and me. And it was good to show my kids these people coming in and how happy they were. So it was a good learning experience for the kids at that time.
And that's a long time ago. And the question is the impact on their lives, too, because once again, as a parent, I'm a proud dad. You're obviously a very proud father and grandfather. But to lead by example, because, you know, once again, actions speak louder than words. People can always say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm planning it, but they don't do it. Because you know why? They're afraid. They're afraid, oh, my God, I'm going to fall on my face. Oh, my God, somebody's going to say, oh, I told you you're going to fail. But tell us about your thoughts about putting your hat in the ring and doing it.
Well, somebody had to do it. You know, before that, I remember people with that insurance, what had to be done was you'd have to send them to the Commission for the Blind, and the Commission for Blind would evaluate them, and then they would pay. They give a couple hundred dollars, but they would help subsidize the surgery. And then if you're a mensch, you do the surgery for a very discounted fee. And I figured, why do I need $200 to do cataract surgery? I don't need the $200, and I don't need them going to Commission for Blind. Let them use that money for something else. And that's why I started to do this.
Well, it's like you said, it's a beautiful thing. So you have a team. Mm-hmm. Right? Eyesight 2020, you have a team, you have other ophthalmologists. What's it like working with your colleagues towards a common goal, which is to make people's lives better? What's it like with the teamwork?
It's great. The other doctors that work with me are great, too. I mean,
you can give them a shout out. I mean, hopefully they'll listen.
Let's see. We got Ken Miller, Michael Farbowitz. We got Allison Gunsberg, who's in my office. I think that's it for right now. If I forgot anybody, I'm sorry.
Okay.
But there are other ophthalmologists in the area that are involved with the ASCRS Foundation on their own. So there are other doctors around that are doing this. But I just thought it was the easiest way to go about it was to start my own foundation and make it work. I mean,
well,
it's a lot of hustling, yeah.
You have made it work, Doc. But, you know, when you have a team towards a common goal, a lot can be achieved, a lot. Do you talk to your colleagues about it, about, you know, just the overall experience? Are they sharing their thoughts with you?
Of course, yeah.
Like, what goes on? What's the discussion?
It's the same thing. I know Michael Farbowitz. He's out of Short Hills. He's taken it to the next level. He's actually left the country and done some charity work in other countries, which is something I've always wanted to. I haven't done it yet. So, you know, he's gotten majorly involved with it as well.
So that's another colleague, right, being involved, and he's spreading the great work throughout the world. And I know you also, I believe that's one of your goals, too, in the future to do
that.
Why is that important? Why is it important to take your talent and skills and be able to get it out there to help others, not only in the United States, in New Jersey particularly, but going out in our wonderful world?
Because there's people in need, and they're underserved. And if I'm not going to do it, who's going to do it?
Yeah, well, you know, I've had some incredible guests on that have gone overseas to change the world.
I mean, we have a plastic surgeon in our office, Michael Richard, and he just got back from Africa doing surgery in Africa. He does this every year. He's going to Africa every year to do surgery
for free.
For free.
So, and like, once again, like, this is what I was saying. That's why I love the show, because there are people out there. This is another thing that I don't understand. I love doing the show because there's wonderful people. All this gloom and doom and people are bad. And, you know, candidly, there's a lot of horrific violence, random violence out there.
Sure.
You know, your heart breaks when you hear about these mass shootings and all these horrible things. And God bless and God rest all those souls who lost to gun violence. It's insane.
Terrible.
It's horrible. But there's people making a difference. Why do you think people don't realize or focus on the goodness of people?
Because there's a lot of bad things happening in the world, too. I mean, it's much easier to focus on that. I mean, we're getting a shooting every day, like you mentioned. I mean, and what's on the news all the time? All they have on the news is rapes and shootings and muggings. And occasionally they'll say somebody that does something for charity. but that doesn't sell. That doesn't sell commercials on the news.
Well, that's true. But what I'm saying is that there's so much goodness out there, and you're just, you know, giving us a little tiny sliver of it. So when your colleagues and you were together and you're doing these free procedures, are there other stories that stand out in your mind that are just, you know, wow? It's really changing lives. You have some really interesting, you know, examples.
Well, like the trucker is the one that first came to mind. But, you know, I'm seeing, you know, I've done a couple of people in their 40s who were totally blind for years and indigent and couldn't get a job. And because of this, they're able to go back to work. I mean, it's amazing. And I'll tell you, another thing that's great is, you know, I do my surgery at River Drive Surgery Center in Elmwood Park. And when we had the one day only, it was a day off, it was a day before Thanksgiving, the full staff was in there. It was their favorite day of the year. I mean, they could have had the day off, but they decided to come in to work that day because they were able to treat all these people. And just to see the effect this had on the staff for them, you know, finally doing something good, was, I mean, everybody has a smile on their face. It was great, as opposed to the normal day at work.
So this is another example of when you give, mm-hmm. when you give from the heart, you get so much more back. It's an incredible feeling, right, to see you're changing lives.
Absolutely.
I have a great friend of mine, Dr. Glenn Goldstein. He's a pretty big fan of the show. And him and his handsome son, Zach, who's going to get married in probably less than a year now. But I bring them on because they're actually going to Tennessee, and they go down there, and they get free dental care. I mean, it's a remarkable thing. Dr. Michael Ingber, a great friend of mine, you're a lot.
We've had a lot of patients from Tennessee come up for the surgery.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
It's crazy, but yeah. Dr. Michael Ingber, you know, doing world-class, incredible urogynecological procedure. Dr. Mary Lo Fermento, so many wonderful people I brought on, but I can see in their eyes, professionally, it's one thing, but they're doing something, and they're getting so much more out of it when they're doing it really gratis, you know?
Yeah, we get things in spades, for sure.
No doubt about it. And that's the other thing, too, you know, how it changes your trajectory. So I can just see you brought your three beautiful kids to the office at a relatively young age, and they saw Dad doing something. Mm-hmm. How do you think that impacted their lives?
I do. I think they're all on their own. They all have kids now, and I think they like to give back.
How does that make you feel as a dad?
I'm very proud of my kids. They're great kids.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But once again, what you do...
But the only reason I didn't kill my kids was my grandchildren.
Oh, you're right. Well, there you go. The grandkids. Yeah, the grandkids. You know, my parents are in heaven, so they don't see our boys. They were wonderful people.
Yeah.
But my in-laws were in, and I see the joy in their face when they're hanging out with their little kids. You know,
they love it.
There's nothing better and more rewarding in life than that. So you've been doing this now for over a decade. What's your goal with your Vision Harvest?
I just to keep it going. Just to keep it going.
How do you think you can do that?
Well, I still like what I do, so I'm going to work as long as I can do surgery. When I stop doing surgery, I'll probably be done working. So I'll give it off to one of the younger colleagues, and hopefully they'll be able to run with it.
Right. Well, obviously you're mentoring and you're developing you know, a great team.
Yeah.
One of the things, too, is, you know, professionally, is when it's time to basically be more of a mentor as opposed to actually doing the actual surgeries.
Right.
Is there any kind of rule on that? Or is it just kind of in your own professional judgment?
I think so. As long as you're still doing a good job and you enjoy doing it, you do it.
Yeah, you know, I was reading, you know, Lou Gehrig, the Iron Horse, his last year when he played for the Yankees, they said it was one of his greatest seasons because, unfortunately, it was an ALS, but they didn't really know what the problem was. And he still had, near the end of the year, a spectacular year.
Right.
But like with the surgeon, if like a lawyer, there's lawyers, as you get older, you lose a little bit of the tools. And some people stay in too long. They're not as sharp as they were.
That's not going to be me.
No, you have a lot of other interests. So let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about, you know, I know you love photography.
Yeah.
And I know that you when you get a chance to travel, you take the most amazing pictures.
Thank you.
What do you look for? You think there's a relationship between your ability to fix people's eyes, their eyesight, and the camera, right? Because there's obviously some relationships. Both have lenses. That's as far as I know. I mean, I don't know too much about the camera world. I know my father-in-law, he had nice, he says the Leica lens, a very nice lens.
The Leica.
There you go. So for the listeners, maybe my wife is listening, who knows? But the point is that I know there's probably an interesting relationship. What are your thoughts on that between being an ophthalmologist and you love photography?
There's a lot of analogies between the eye and a camera. They both have lenses. The back of the camera, you have used to be film, now it's a sensor, and the retina does the same thing. There's a lot in common. So when I explain conditions to patients, I usually talk about a camera. And my office is kind of cool. I'm a black and white photographer, so my office is lined with all the pictures that I take, and I'm constantly changing them. And I think the patient's like walking around the office looking at the pictures. It just, you know, kind of calms them a little bit.
Is there a certain angle you look for? Is it a moment? What goes through your mind?
Taking a picture?
Yeah, like, do you have a methodology?
It's all about the moment, yeah. I do a lot of street photography. It's all about capturing that moment. But I don't know.
I just enjoy it,
yeah.
How often do you take pictures?
Every week.
Every week?
Every week, yeah.
Is there a time of day you just go out, I'm going to let my mind go, I'm just going to go take pictures?
No, sometimes I just take it with my iPhone if I forget my camera. I mean, but I'm always thinking about taking a picture. I took a picture today. My wife and I are sitting there before coming here, and a giant bear walked across our yard. So I had to go grab my camera and take a picture.
A giant bear? Did the bear smile for the picture?
Yeah, he was afraid of us. He ran the other way.
Those bears, they're
big
naughty
black bear.
They're naughty. They can be.
He got our garbage yesterday. So
did he have a nice snack? Or was it a full course meal?
He had a nice snack.
I bet he did, yeah. The bears are no joke, though, I have to say. I thought they were cute and cuddly. But when they're on your property, or they're like rolling through the neighborhood, lumbering through the neighborhood,
just lumbering through,
it's not the greatest feeling, especially when you have kids.
Yeah, there are no kids in our house, and it was easy.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little frightening. But also, if the little cubs are around too, I understand that
can
be
careful,
dangerous.
Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. So let's talk about, you know, your practice is part of your life. You're doing Vision Harvest. And what are your thoughts about folks getting involved in the community, making a difference? What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's very rewarding to them, and it's very rewarding to the community. I mean, it's a win-win situation. I mean, not only the people you're helping get something out of it, but I think I get something more than I'm giving.
Incredible.
I think I get something more.
Now, you mentioned the community. So once again, you know, your peers, your colleagues in the ophthalmological community, they're seeing by example someone like you, very gifted, able to take time and give back. Do you think that creates a ripple effect among your peers?
Somewhat. I think a lot of guys are involved, but a lot of guys aren't. A lot of guys want nothing to do with it for whatever reason.
Right. And for the ones that are doing it, you think their lives are more rewarded?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
So I might have butchered the name of the organization, the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons.
Surgery.
You got this prestigious award in 2022, the Operation Site Volunteer of the Year Award.
Yeah.
And I was canvassing their website, and they have a lot of extraordinary ophthalmologists that have given so much from their heart and soul and change in the world, because it is something more, nothing's more precious than your eyesight. You became that Volunteer of the Year. What was that like?
Well, first of all, there were 12 of us. It wasn't just me. They picked 12 surgeons for the year. I mean, but I was surprised and very excited about it. So last year, they had their annual meeting. It was in Washington, D.C., and they had a little award ceremony and a dinner. And they had all these little signs for each doctor. And then we took those signs home, and they're sitting in our offices now. But it was very rewarding to feel acknowledged.
You go with your wife down to Washington?
No.
Just yourself. All right. So when you were driving down, you drove or flew?
I actually was in Florida. I flew up from Florida and then flew home from there.
Okay. Yeah. But when you were getting on the plane, you're going to land in Dulles?
Yeah, I think it was Dulles, yeah.
What were you thinking about? Were you thinking about the work you put in to get to that point?
I was actually thinking about taking some pictures of Washington and worrying about the award the next day.
You want to tell the organization.
It was exciting. It was exciting.
But did you envision when you're an honest guy, by the way. I like that. did you, you know, When you were getting the award, though, did you ever think from doing the work for over 10 years that you would be, you know, singled out among 12? And it's 12 in the country,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, I did not. And that's not why I did it either. But I was very surprised. Yeah.
But this is another example of life's mystery, the journey. The journey. Like, who knows what's going to happen, right? I mean, life is crazy.
Right.
One minute you're going one way, the next minute you're getting clobbered, or one idea was good, and then you realize it wasn't the greatest
sure.
idea. But did you reflect at all when you got up on the podium to get the award? That I hope you weren't just focused on taking pictures.
At that point,
no. But were you focused on, you know, that's cool. You know, like, how'd you feel?
I felt very proud, very proud.
Did you reflect though on like the journey, like when you started, and you're among your peers and you're being singled out among in a prestigious organization?
Yeah. I really didn't. I was more. It's more shock and awe. You know, not something that I ever expected to do. And again, it's not the reason I started to do it. It was a good feeling, but I was surprised.
So you know, I understand a lot of people in the journey of life, the journey of giving back. They're on a journey. This could be considered, like you're saying, very humbly. It was like, okay, I got the award. It was beautiful, but I just do it because I do it. I'm not worried about getting the accolades
exactly.
or the pat on the back. I wasn't thinking about getting an award, but you're right. You felt very humbled by it. I mean, I've been very blessed. In 2005, I had a few awards mm-hmm. for my work with kids with disabilities, and my late parents were there. It was just I wasn't doing that to get the award.
Of course,
I was very honoring and humbling, but I was like, you know, that's my journey. I'm just doing my thing. I'm not worried about what award I get. I just want to do the right thing.
You're doing it for the kids.
You're doing it for the kids.
Yeah.
And you're doing it for the people.
Exactly.
But you're doing it in a way, Doc, very humbly, but you're making such a difference. I mean, I read some of the thank you notes that you've received,
mm-hmm.
you know, and also for myself, like professionally, when I get a note from a client, it means so much because I know they took time and they really want to say thank you. And this is the other thing weird about life. Sometimes just a thank you is nice. People don't say thank you enough.
Absolutely not.
You know, it's a weird thing, but when you get a thank you, it's like, oh, you know, it's worth it.
It's important to say thank you.
It is.
My scrub nurse hands me an instrument in the OR. I say thank you.
Exactly.
I don't know if everybody does that. I always say thank you.
It's the
acknowledgement that counts. I agree with you. Thank you is very important.
I used to go to court and the judge would make a bad ruling against my clients and I would say thank you. And the judge would say, why are you thanking me? Thank you, Your Honor. But no, but like
thanks
said,
for nothing.
I was thinking that's probably what he thought. No, but the reason why I say it's important to really show your gratitude and your appreciation.
I agree.
You know? So where do you want to go professionally from here, Doc? You know, I know you have other hobbies and other interests, but where do you see your life on the journey? Have you thought about your goals in the future?
No, because I'm getting towards the end of the road.
Oh, you got a lot of fire left.
I do. But I just want to keep what I'm doing for as long as I'm doing it.
Right. Now, yeah. What about like mentorship? Are you trying to groom or work with some younger ophthalmologists?
I have a couple in the office, but yeah, I always like to do that. You know, my son-in-law's brother is an ophthalmologist, so it was nice seeing him go through the process. Now he's out in practice on his own. Actually here in Jersey, but he's moving up to Massachusetts with his wife, which is where she's from. But it's nice to see, you know, I saw him through the whole process up from college to med school to wanting to be an ophthalmologist to getting his residency. Now he's practicing. It's nice to see that.
That's
shout out to Joel Packett.
There you go. Shout out. He can hopefully like and subscribe too. But, you know, that's the beauty of life too. It is a journey. You're you know, you're watching, you're also mentoring, and you're
yep.
seeing a practice grow. And once again, for the folks that have been listening and watching, how do they reach Vision Harvest?
VisionHarvest.org. And you have the phone number.
I do. 973-200-8250. So, you know, Doc.
So people yeah. can call that number if they have a relative that's in need of cataract surgery. There's a hotline. You leave your message and we'll get back to you. Or if you want to give them some money, it would be good, too, to help support these people.
So they can donate
they
also.
They can donate on the website as well, yes.
So they would go on the website and there's an area for them
exactly,
to donate.
Exactly.
And that's another area, too. There are people that are very generous.
Absolutely.
In terms
absolutely.
Of their ability to give financially.
Yes.
Because everybody has certain things in life they can give.
Sure.
And that's the reason why I love the show. It's a very diverse audience in terms of what people might be interested in. Today, you're wonderful ophthalmologists. I've had other walks of life, different folks. Other folks with a lot of money, they donate. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to use your wealth and pay it forward and give it back.
Absolutely.
I think that's really important. And similarly, whatever your gifts or talents are. Vision Harvest, is that something that is available in other states too, to your knowledge? Not the name, but like where there's also free procedures being done.
So the ARCRS Foundation is national and they have doctors all through the country. So actually we get a lot of patients from them who call them directly and then they just refer them to us. So you know, if somebody's listening to this from somewhere else in the country, I would contact the ARCRS Foundation. And they can put you in touch with somebody locally. And but that being said, I've taken care of people from all over the country. If you can get to New Jersey, I'll take care of you.
You know, I got to go back to the thumbs up. You know, there's a picture up on your Facebook page on January 25th. The viewers can't, listeners can't see it, and the viewers, but there's a group of your team.
Yes.
Huddled around two patients, and everybody's got the thumbs up.
Yeah.
What's that like? I mean, you know, that's just a cool picture.
It's awesome. Like I said, these are the days that the staff finds very rewarding. They're not just going there to do work. They're going there to help people. It's really
and,
great.
But, you know, that's a beautiful thing, too, right? You're not just going for the paycheck. You're actually making a difference and you're helping.
Absolutely.
You know, and do they ever chat with you too and be like, you know, doc, this is wonderful. Does it help?
Oh yeah,
the team,
the staff loves it. You know, like I said, now we're not doing it one day; we're doing it throughout the year. So, whenever I know my next patient is a Vision Harvest patient, I tell the staff in the room, and they get better care. They're more excited. Everybody's smiling. They know that they're doing something special on this patient.
And that's the other thing about life: the trajectory of life. If you can find something you love. And you get paid for it. That's like a bonus.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, when you know you're directly doing something from the heart and soul, it makes it that much better. And that's the incredible thing about Vision Harvest and what you and your team have been able to do for over 10 years. And God willing, it'll continue on and on and on. These are very, very important things to do in life is to give back.
Definitely.
And you did touch on for people throughout our great country, they can contact the main organization and find a particular specialist in the state they're in, which is vitally important because, once again, there's a real need. And that was the other thing, too. Vision Harvest, there was a need.
Yeah.
And you were able to solve that need. I'm not suggesting every patient who is qualified is getting it done, but hopefully shows like
not
mine
even close.
Will motivate the folks. So, you know, Doc, I just want to say once again, when you were willing to come on, I know you have a lot of different commitments. It meant so much for you to take time out of your day and share your journey with us.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for acknowledging me.
Well, you should be acknowledged, and I know you're very humble, but it was, you know, wonderful to have you on. And for the listeners, you know, this is another example of why I do the journey of giving back. Everybody can do a little something to make the world better. I believe we are in this together, and we should do what we can to help others in need. If it's a friend, a family member, somebody you may not know, but you know they need something. You know, there's people that just want to get a little help, a little hand up. We can do this together. Remember, we're one big world. We're always ready to help another. You just got to be willing to put your hat in the ring. God bless you, and please tune in next week. Take care.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.